it is still an unusual and maybe an exceptional activity for the people who take it, in that it is something very, at once very specific and also very open-ended. The question is very simple. What do you believe? And tell us the story behind that belief.
In some ways, it's effective in reaching at people's innermost vulnerabilities and, you know, what they're truly thinking and feeling. What strikes me about the series are the successes and failures that certain people reveal about their own lives. Take Harry S. Truman. He recorded an essay after he served as president about things he would like to see happen to further promote integration.
I believe that a civil rights program, as we must practice it today, involves not so much the protection of the people against the government, but the protection of the people by the government. And for this reason, we must make the federal government a friendly, vigilant defender of the rights and equalities of all Americans, and that every man should be free to live his life as he wishes.
Do you feel these essays bring more out of people that we can't get out of a biography?
Well, yeah, I do. I think that, especially in the case of the clip you just played from Harry Truman, this was his first major public pronouncement after leaving office. He left office in January of 1953, and this aired right afterwards. So this was like the first thing on his mind as a public, as a private citizen after leaving the presidency, is that the number one thing America had to focus on was civil rights. And he puts it in this global context. He basically says, how could we possibly be a beacon to the rest of the world? And in the subtext is, and keep them from going to the other side, to the Soviet Union, if we have this ugly apartheid going on in this country. So I think several of these essays from very public people like Eleanor Roosevelt, like Harry Truman, in their day were really eye-opening to people. Eleanor Roosevelt wrote one where she talked about, I'm not sure there's an afterlife.
I don't know whether I believe in a future life. I believe that all that you go through here must have some value. Therefore, there must be some reason. And there must be some going on. How exactly that happens, I've never been able to decide.
The Cardinal of Los Angeles did a homily just against Eleanor Roosevelt and tried to lobby CBS to cancel the This I Believe series precisely because they had the audacity to put on an essay from such a public figure expressing a question about the existence of the afterlife.
There are plenty of essays out there from the series about religion and faith. One of them is by a former University of Illinois journalism professor named John Fountain. Let's take a listen.
I believe in God, God the Father, embodied in his Son, Jesus Christ, the God who allowed me to feel his presence, whether by the warmth that filled my belly like hot chocolate on a cold afternoon, or that voice whenever I found myself in the tempest of life's storms, telling me, even when I was told I was nothing, that I was something.
In what ways do you believe these essays inspire people?
Well, I think they serve a really useful function to inspire a dialogue about religious and spiritual belief. In particular, the John Fountain essay, which is a wonderful essay, and I've had the opportunity, we did an event in Chicago when we launched our first book that John Fountain was at, as well as Studs Terkel and some other Chicago area essayists. It inspired an enormous amount of discussion amongst NPR listeners and the general public. And by the way, it happened to air back-to-back with an essay that we got from the magician and sort of comedian and public atheist, Penn Jillette, and his was called I Believe There Is No God. And between those two essays, the sort of dialectic of atheism and very profound religious belief, it opened up this enormous, actually international online dialogue about the nature of belief. So the very nature that people can be inspired to talk about difficult subjects that normally only get shouted about, I think that is unto itself a useful function of this series, is to get people talking in a respectful way about their differences around whether it's religious belief, political beliefs, or any other kind of beliefs.
You know, encouraging people to submit essays, how are you going about attracting a large, diverse group of people with a variety of viewpoints?
Well, I think the most effective way we've been able to do that, and this actually brings me to why I'm coming to your neck of the woods to speak at the University of Illinois, and that is that this has been embraced enormously by educators from the upper reaches of elementary school to graduate school and everything in between. And so we have received over 75,000 essays, for example, from students under the age of 18, never mind the college-age students, which is several tens of thousands more. And so I believe that's a pretty good cross-section of young America, because they're basically, this is a requirement that in their classes that they write one of these essays. And I think actually I'm really excited about the idea of scholars sometime in the future looking back on these tens of thousands of essays from American, mostly teenagers, about their worries and their aspirations and their beliefs and what it says about America during this particular decade.
This hasn't just become an American tradition. It's become a tradition on a global scale. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I'll mention that just in the past couple of weeks, a version of this, I believe, has started in Kenya on the radio network in Kenya. There has been a version of this, I believe, done in Spain, in Nepal. We are working with a group in Egypt to start an Egyptian version of this, I believe. And that's just sort of the formalized projects. Informally, there are teachers and communities and various institutions all over the world that have been using this, I believe, especially in schools. And in particular, the country that has embraced this more than any other is China. And I'm not 100% sure why, except I know there's a great interest in English as a second language there. So this has been embraced in a lot of ESL classes over in China. But we have got thousands of essays from Chinese, especially youth, but also people of all ages in our database. Same thing with India, same thing with South Korea, and several other Asian countries that have really embraced this. So it's a very interesting thing to see what people around the world in differing circumstances have to say. And what's really interesting is it seems like there's more similarities than dissimilarities.